Good afternoon and welcome to today's meeting of the Commonwealth Club of California. I'm Dr. Dina Ibrahim, Associate Professor of Broadcast and Electronic Communication Arts at San Francisco State University, and your moderator for today's program. We also welcome our listening audience and invite everyone to visit us online at www.commonwealthclub.org. And now it is my pleasure to introduce our distinguished speaker. Dr. Osama Hassanin has managed over $1 billion of international technology funds since 1982. He was chairman or co-founder of seven leading-edge digital communication startups in the U.S., U.K., Switzerland, and France. Currently, he is chairman of TechWedi and of BDNA Corporation in Silicon Valley and of Equivox in Geneva. He served on the board of advisors of Harvard University, UCSF, the American University in Cairo. He is a charter member of the C100, a Silicon Valley-based association dedicated to mentoring and financing Canadian entrepreneurs. He lectured on management science at Stanford University and the University of San Diego, and on international business and entrepreneurship at UC Berkeley and Santa Clara University. TechWedi is a Silicon Valley-based nonprofit organization building bridges between the United States and MENA, that's Middle East and North Africa. These bridges promote entrepreneurship, support innovation, and foster economic development through its powerful global platform for cooperation and collaboration. In the MENA region, TechWedi works with leading regional and international organizations to empower high-impact entrepreneurs and help build a sustainable infrastructure for entrepreneurship to thrive and succeed. TechWedi's members include hundreds of the expatriate community's top technologists, business leaders, investors, and entrepreneurs. So, we'll begin. And now we'll begin the fireside chat portion of your program. Dr. Hassanin, let's begin by talking about entrepreneurs in the Middle East you've worked with recently. I'm sure the audience would love to hear success stories of entrepreneurial drive, innovation, and growth that you've witnessed.
Well, thank you very much, and so wonderful to see so many familiar faces and friends. Many of them are actually examples of the entrepreneurs that I've had the opportunity to meet in the last 3 years. It really came about, and my apologies in advance if there are anti-Obama people in the audience, but he went to Cairo University and started this amazing initiative that was labeled as a new beginning, reaching out to the Muslim majority countries at a level completely different from, if you will, conflict resolution and oil, but much more to build bridges to promote economic development and entrepreneurship. And it's fair to say that it is this visit that has awakened in many of us the sense of responsibility to look back at our countries and try to, if you will, give back. Coincidentally, there was an amazing report that was published, and I hope some of you have seen it. If not, then I'll be happy to share it, about the Global Irish, talking about the fact that Ireland is completely bankrupt, according to the government, and there are 80 million Irish people living outside of Ireland. Bill Clinton is one example, and saying the responsibility for rebuilding our nation lies not with the World Bank or with the European community, but with our extended global community. And emphasizing that we are not actually seeking your riches, but the richness of your experience. Not asking you to shape policy, but to create the contours around it based on what we think is most appropriate. At the same time, there were some fantastic organizations here that could have been used as a very good model of outreach to our countries from, you know, Iraq to Morocco. I guess the most notable of them is the Organization of Pakistani Entrepreneurs, OPEN, and one of its most illustrious member and a very good friend, Farouk Ahmed, is actually with us here, the Indus Entrepreneur, or TAI, which is fairly global right now and has a superb network of angel investors that are active and creating successes out of the company started here in Silicon Valley. So following on President Obama's call, we created this so-called TechWadi 100 charter members that would commit mind and heart to help entrepreneurs in the Middle East. Hit the road in April 2010. That was, in fact, a state-sponsored program in conjunction with President Obama's entrepreneurship, global entrepreneurship program in Washington, D.C. And then on from Washington, just keep going, in this particular case, east, young man. Cairo, and then Lebanon. So more than one place, actually, in Lebanon, more than one place in Jordan, eventually, believe it or not, to Syria, where we met President Assad at the time, and Dubai and Qatar. And all of it was a combination of fact-finding and boot camps. So it would be environments like these where people who feel that in this connected world, the most important thing we can do is what we can do with each other, show up, and then discuss how. So as a consequence, corporate partners, incubators, angel investors, business plan competition organizers, and universities, both staff and students, and government officials. Over time, we ended up meeting about 3,000 of these entrepreneurs and connect with about 300 of them in the sense of having Skype calls, reviewing business plans, and so on and so forth. In the last 2 years, the landscape of entrepreneurship has changed quite a bit, actually, in the Middle East. For example, the incubation. Incubation was supposed to be an American phenomenon, and while it has spread worldwide, there are reputedly 4,600 incubators around the world, of which half of them are in the U.S., and the highest impact of them are actually in this area here in Silicon Valley. So many of their models were actually licensed or adopted or exported if you will, customized to the environment of the different countries. I think Flat 6 Lab, which is actually focused on investing and incubating mobile application developers, is a very, very good example of a successful one combining bootcamp, education, angel financing, and business acceleration. I don't know if Haytham is here. He's actually one of the entrepreneurs. He's visiting Silicon Valley. N2V, both in Jordan and in Palestine and in Saudi Arabia, also very effective. 500 startup, the equivalent of 500 startup, Oasis 500 in Jordan, is a fantastic organization started by the senior vice president of Yahoo, who specializes in data mining. His name is Osama Fayyad. He's one of these guys that somehow brings good luck, and I guess maybe it comes from actual, real, hardcore involvement to create success rather than make passive investments. There are 70 companies that have joined in less than 1 year. And it's on a 6 weeks program. Very, very beautiful accelerator. 2454, of course, in Dubai, the Qatar Science and Technology Park in Qatar, and so on and so forth. Many, many wonderful examples. From our side, the idea was to try to engage. It's cooperation, reaching out to accelerate the success of initiatives, organizations, and people that have already taken that first step. There are two types of mentors. There are the charter members of the TechWadi 100, and Osama Fayyad is an example of them. And these are typically venture capitalists and CEOs of companies that have demonstrably succeeded, or people that have patents that are unique in the world and what have you. And then we have the youth mentorship program, and that is typically under 40. Very much on the assumption that people like me should speak but not do, and then have the guys who can actually get the job done do it, and actually help accelerate whether it is Arab American entrepreneurs here in the United States or or in the Middle East, or MENA, as Dina has mentioned, Middle East and North Africa. One that I absolutely like amongst those is Ahmed. And Ahmed, you are here with us. Are you the only one wearing a tie?
I was American.
Okay, so that's very deep knowledge in finance and in accounting. He was one of the earliest volunteers, attended with us an amazing conference called American Middle Eastern Network for Dialogue at Stanford, AMENS. We can talk about it later. It's a fantastic initiative that will continue. And very recently, Ahmed actually set up his own firm. You cannot sign up as a client. His pipeline is completely full, which is an amazing startup, actually. But Ahmed, you are actually mentoring one of the companies here in Silicon Valley. Yes. In California.
Yes,
do you mind sharing?
Absolutely.
Yeah?
Thank you.
Fantastic.
Well, good afternoon. I'm actually going to talk today about a company called SmartSed. And the founder of the company is a friend of mine. And we were talking, and he shared with me his idea. And I felt compelled to talk to Dr. Osama and bring it to TechReady because I felt that there were some significant potential there. It is really focusing on education. And SmartSed is basically an incentivized learning platform that allows student communities to collaborate, to learn, and to earn rewards as they learn. It is basically creating an ecosystem of student communities, content providers such as publishers, advertisers, vendors, and the idea is for students, let's say somebody who wants to learn English language, from China, they can sign up for classes and quizzes and courses online, and by doing that, they earn e-dividends where they can redeem in either cash, basically rewards, or getting scholarships or things like that. And he have really two business models. He have one that the students would pay subscription, and this would be the revenue model. And he have another one where it's really just advertisers and sponsorship rather than paying for subscriptions. Obviously, just meeting for 5 minutes with Dr. Osama and TechReady, he already identified four or five people who had experience doing similar things, and we are going to try to connect them together and basically kind of tap into their experience and see where we can learn and how we can help them go to the next level. So that's pretty much it.
Thank you very much. And what Ahmed is exemplifying is not the role of the advisor, but of the mentor. Because the mentor isn't paid, isn't compensated. He can invest in the company if he so wants. But at the same time, where he espouses the success of the company as his own. So thank you very, very much, Ahmed.
Thank you.
When I met Omar with Ahmed's introduction, he was just an amazing example of the kind of guy who would team up with others that have deep domain experience, work in their so-called free time, which means after they finish the 60 hours a week, they still have about another 40, build a prototype, launch the product, acquire the customer, and all of this on their own nickel. All what's left right now is that final push from people like Ahmed and others so that in the next 4 months, we actually have a real startup financed by angel investors, if you will. I would like to maybe highlight another very impressive success story of internationalization, how you can leverage technology developed somewhere in the world, bring it to where the market is, focus on acquiring clients whose brands can create your own success, and then have what many people in my business call the exit. In other words, you realize the investment, you go public, maybe not exactly at $80 billion like Facebook, but something a very, very nice, decent exit to generate the kind of money that can be recycled to continue to finance entrepreneurs. Best example I know is Tamer and Zong. Do you want to share the story with us?
Sure.
Okay. I would say it's not the best story I know, but it's the one that I have the most affection for. He's my son.
Is this level good in the mic, or should I speak separately from the mic? It's good? Great. So in 2007, around the time I was graduating from university, I had an opportunity to work with Google, but ended up kind of gravitating toward another company doing some pretty cool stuff in mobile called EchoVox, based in Geneva, which at the time was, you know, they were kind of working on a self-service mobile platform where anyone can kind of go and create their own mobile application, including a payments application. So as it turns out, as we started to kind of track the results of the product, it became clear that payments were kind of the thing that we should focus on. But at the time, we were in Europe only, so we decided that we needed to expand to kind of the best market for what we were doing, which is the U.S., and specifically Silicon Valley. We brought the company over here at the beginning of 2008, so the CEO and myself came over, hired a team here. We actually opened our office on Hamilton Avenue, next door to Facebook in Palo Alto. And well, at the time they were there, they actually ended up moving. But another one of our customers took over their space, so it was kind of cool. That being said, we really wanted to work with these guys. We knew they were kind of the key customer to get to kind of make the business successful. So they agreed to do a trial with us in 2009, late 2009, beginning 2010. We did about $500,000 of payment volume with them in the first 12 months. In the next 12 months, we did $100 million in payment volume with them, so about 200 times more. And as a result, ended up getting the attention of PayPal, who ended up acquiring us to become part of their mobile business unit. And actually, the founder of Zong, David Marcus, is now the president of PayPal. So, you know, I think that we had a great business, but I think that the reason really why PayPal wanted to acquire Zong versus any of the other, you know, well-funded and strong competitors in the space is that we were kind of viewed as being the most kind of advanced in our thinking, if you will, kind of global in our thinking. And so they wanted that kind of talent, not just the business, but, you know, a team of very strong mobile payments folks. So anyway, very long story for international expansion, but that was basically it. And last August is when the transaction completed, and things seem to be going really well so far. So that's it.
Thank you.
Thanks
very much.
So, wonderful example of an Arab American entrepreneur without a long beard, which is great. Tamer makes it look very easy, and indeed it is, when there is a good value proposition. To come to Silicon Valley from anywhere, it can be from Geneva, it can be from France, it can be from China, India, from anywhere, and find a community with affinity here in Silicon Valley, unlike any community around the world, that isn't about judging, but is about lifting, about helping, about creating success without necessarily figuring out who should take the most credit. Of course, there are some nuances that need to be negotiated about equity and what have you, but in the end, let's run as fast as we can together to reach the end line here. Now, building a company is not necessarily very easy. I met an amazing entrepreneur for many months. I actually will always ask him, so tell me again where you come from, because his country has been in war for 11 years, and that's Iraq. And yet that man seems to be very much at peace and building a company that is very connected to media, and any opportunity that I happen to attend, for example, for presentation of business plans and what have you, he's there, engaged with the audience and helping people express their opinion about whether or not they like what they see. The company has a beautiful name, Snoozy, and Bilal is here to tell us a little bit about it and not make it too easy for us, huh? Okay.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. Can you hear me well? So my name is Bilal Hamadi. I'm the co-founder of Snoozy.com, and Snoozy has three O's in between. To tell you a little bit of my background, I was born in Texas in 1984. After 6 months, we moved back to Iraq, and then spent about 8 years in Iraq, 8 years in Libya, came back here when I was 16, and been here since then. Was in the medical industry for about 4 years, decided to jump ships about a year ago. So I quit my job, and with my brother who's sitting here, we started a company called Snoozy. Initially, we started as an audience engagement platform, and then we focused mainly now on television and radio. So we developed a system that allows a station to engage with your audience easily across a live audience and also social media followers to get their opinion and express it in real time. So we started working with NBC Bay Area about 4 months ago. We started actually on Super Bowl Day. And we've been working with them for about 4 months now. We just officially launched at TechCrunch in New York about a month ago. And now we're working with NBC Universal, Comcast, and a few of the large players in the market trying to bring this everywhere and make this technology accessible. So when we started this company, we actually went to one of the incubators in Silicon Valley. Probably you guys heard of it, Plug and Play Tech Center. I'm sure you heard of it. So it's been a good experience because of all the mentoring, like Dr. Sama and a lot of other advisors. I mean, mentoring, honestly, is worth a lot more than money because they can put you in the right track to succeed. So we've been there for about a year. It's been a great experience. And now we're developing another application that will supplement the first application we have. So it will allow you to interact with stations or a host of a show live, as well as interacting with all your friends and followers using social media. So our goal is to make TV truly interactive and engage you with your audience and your friends in real time.
Very, very wonderful. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks very much. So here you are, examples of the people, the youth, the Arab American youth, that will help the Arab countries have a better future.
Incredibly inspiring. Now, moving on in a few days, on Thursday, in fact, June 28th, there'll be an MIT Arab Business Plan Competition. Can you tell us a bit more about that in terms of its value to MENA entrepreneurs and what TechWedi's role is?
It has a great deal of value, Dina. It started about 5 years ago, and MIT has a number of geographically targeted competition, business plan competition. In the case of the Arab business plan competition, this year there were 4,500 entrepreneurs who submitted business plans. I'm sorry, 4,500 companies. So the total is 13,500 entrepreneurs who participated. Very, very few of them, obviously, from MIT. But the program manager of the MIT ABC Arab Business Plan Competition, Hala Fadel, is actually Lebanese. She went to MIT, and she is now a portfolio manager at Comgest in Paris. So it's a bit of a triangular aller-retour, kind of organizing these events. It takes about 8 months and 150 volunteer judges to screen the 4,500 business plans and end up with the 50 that make the most sense. We then spend 3 days with them. It can be in Tunis, it can be in Abu Dhabi, as was the case this year, in refining skills. It can be skills about competitive analysis, about financial modeling, about making a pitch, because in 7 minutes, if you can convince the judges that it makes sense, even if the business plan is not perfect, they may just like you, and they say, yeah, wow, it's just so passionate and so articulate and what have you. And about team. Teamwork is important because, unfortunately, in our countries, we have two things that we need to reach, if you will. One of them is something that you take as a given when you are born and raised, especially in California, and that's the implied covenants of good faith in dealing. If someone joins you to be a partner, it's not really to take a bigger share, but to create a bigger pie. And the second one is conflict resolution. We will not all the time agree on a point of view. How do we learn to listen? How do we create, if you will, emotional and social intelligence that would allow us to figure out how to make progress, not how to be proven right, and then be left alone, so to speak. Following that, we reduced the number of finalists from 50 to 12. This year, I don't know why, it was very difficult to make it 12, so we made an allowance and made it 14. These 14, and I'm very happy to say, come from 10 countries, and equally happy to say that they are equally divided between men and women, and that's not by design. It's just the net result of what has happened. Most of the entrepreneurs, with one exception, are under 30, so that's even more fantastic. And most of the business plans are in fiction. There are two in particular that, to me, sound like really quite extraordinary, both in their impact and in their potential for international expansion. I'm going to mention just these two examples because they give you an idea, as if you were in Dubai on Thursday, about what you would have been witnessing. It's 180 degrees difference between the two business models, if you will. One of them is actually started by a Stanford and Cal Berkeley graduate, so MBA from Stanford. MBA from Cal. He graduated last month. And 7 years ago, he graduated from Stanford undergrad. For those who know him, Tariq Hosni is his name. Lovely, lovely guy. Together with his brother, you, Bilal, they have created an amazing technology to solve three problems. And forgive me if it sounds too ostentatious and pretentious. Hunger, health, and poverty, all in one. How? It's about building rooftop farms with water that is clean enough to not cause diabetes, which is what the Egyptian farmers suffer from and has reduced life expectancy from 76 to 36. And because the farm is so automated to actually require 2 to 3 hours a day of work, every hour that they spend on the farm, in addition to what they have to satisfy their hunger and their food need for their family, this company called Shadouf actually takes the output and sells it and pays them back the money. So it's a double bottom line impact. Social entrepreneurship, hunger, health, and revenues. And for the company to scale, it's also revenue producing. We had a fantastic meeting with Kiva. How many know Kiva? Fantastic. And Julie Hanna was kind enough to say, for $400 a farm to finance, that's absolutely nothing. The impact that it has is absolutely amazing. The objective now is to get up to 10,000 farms by the end of next year. So very, very beautiful company. On the exact opposite side of this, but equally very, very attractive, 22-year-old young lady from Lebanon, for those who know her, Hind Hobeka is her name, actually filed for a patent to measure the pulses of the swimmers from the head, not from the heart, and not from the hands, and display it, as well as all the performance metrics, on goggles. She won 3 or 4 business plan competitions, got some financing, went to a beautiful incubator in Lebanon called Beritech, and before you know it, a wonderful man, he's not with us today, Georges Napier, who is the president of Prince, introduce her to Steven Tyre, who sells more goggles than the rest of the world. And he said, I would like to OEM the product and sell 300,000 of these at $200 a piece. Okay, so how do you manufacture them at low cost? She already subcontracted a manufacturer in China. How can you do all of this at the age of 22? Business mentality, and you know what? It's her passion as a swimmer. That's what she needs, so she designed it correctly and was able to come out and then sell it. When she and I met, I was in Qatar. My phone rang in my room at the hotel, 9 o'clock. And she said, my name is so-and-so, and I have this thing. And I said, would have loved to hear some more, but I'm actually leaving tomorrow. She said, I'm actually in the hotel lobby, so we can talk about it. Okay, MIT is not the only university that has fantastic programs for entrepreneurship, and in particular, at times, the application of science and technology to create for all of us a better life. Now, very close to us is UC Berkeley, of course, and the Lawrence National Lab. So we have Taghreed with us. Taghreed means singing in Arabic. Taghreed is a PhD. She actually works in the lab. Do you want to tell us a little bit about what you do and the impact on humanity? Okay.
So I do computer science research. It's basically data analysis. And at the lab, computing science, the main role is providing support for other basic scientists to do to be to make them able to do their big impact research like physics, chemistry, biology. For example, we help experimental physicists design their experiments and automating their experiments to discover new things about the universe. We also help chemical scientists simulate materials before actually doing them in the lab, for example, to make better batteries and improve the life of all of us. So this doesn't happen by the effort of just one scientist, and we as a computer scientist help make things easier for them and automate things for them. So my vision as an Egyptian and a computer scientist is to make those technologies accessible for all scientists across the globe and connect global talents from all science areas. And the way I see it, like, the starting point has to be science education. We no longer see chemistry, math, physics, and even computing as separate subjects. They have to be taught together with the impact that they all do together on our lives. So I help younger generations see this potential and help them realize that if you do just this simple role, collaborating with others, you help make the world a better place, from finding better sources of water to finding materials to actually analyzing the human genome to help biology and medical sciences. So my short-term goal now is educating our engineering students, math students, about the impact that computing is actually having on those sciences and make the bridges easier between Lawrence Berkeley National Lab and other universities in Egypt by collaborating on science projects that can be done remotely, which we've been doing this in the lab for a long, long time with other places in the world, and also mentoring students and actually help put our young scientists on the map of scientific research globally. Thank you.
Wonderful.
What I truly love about what Tahrir is doing is that it's not science and technology to publish papers and to apply for patents, but to make it a better life. And that's very, very rare. And you're also very involved in volunteering to teach students and what have you, so you're actually combining the research with the actual. And as you know, online education now has become such a hot topic, particularly after this amazing artificial intelligence course that was given by Peter and Sebastian and attracted, how many? 160,000 students online in 2 weeks. Artificial intelligence, we're not talking about how to ride a bike or how to paint a bathroom. I believe that 20,000 of them actually completed the course. Why? Because the students were exchanging in real time tidbits about learning, about internalization, about application. And the teachers or the university professors of Stanford changed seats. Instead of being at the podium pitching, they were actually listening to improve the quality of the course being delivered. Quite extraordinary, and it will scale. Wonderful. Thank you very much again, Tahrir.
So in the spirit of nurturing innovation in the MENA region, Techwedi has a well-established internship and mentorship program. What have those programs contributed to strengthening ties between the Middle East, North Africa, and Silicon Valley?
One thing it has is actually help a man who just walked in now win the MIT Arab Business Plan competition last year. Sharif, you're here, right? Yes. Here he is. You've done well. As you have heard, mentorship has been key to the Techwedi engagement. And I would give most of the credit to one man who was actually with us today. Both in helping set up the program, promoting the program, and then practicing what he preaches with entrepreneurs in MENA, despite the fact that he himself is actually not an Arab. Roham, you're here? Okay, you want to share with us how does the mentorship work and what did you do?
Sure.
All right.
Thank you, Dr. Osama, for the over flattery, I would say that's definitely not accurate.
That's true.
I'd like to maybe talk about maybe one of the companies where the news is very timely, and it's so timely. I'm going to ask you not to actually break it until it's kind of publicly available. Who here speaks Arabic? Okay, almost a good amount of the room. And who here has ever shopped on Amazon.com? Okay, there you go. So through TechWadi, I had the pleasure of meeting about a year and a half ago two young entrepreneurs that had the vision of becoming the Arab world's Amazon.com. That vision in and of itself is very unattainable, I would say, but there are various kind of flavors of it which are good enough. These entrepreneurs over the past year and a half have been through what is also a post that everyone should read called The Struggle by Mark Andreessen. And the struggle has now for them brought them to a point that, and I've had the pleasure of actually observing them over the past year and a half, and we're now at a point of success. So anyway, these entrepreneurs, I met them through the first TechWadi mentorship boot camp in the American University of Cairo. They were chosen as 30 companies out of, I think, 300 or so. And I met them over Skype. And the experience over the past year and a half has not been so much me teaching them as much as just being through the going through the motions and kind of not going through motions, but going through their struggles and their challenges and just being a voice for them. Now, thankfully, I'm in the industry, so I have a lot of knowledge to share. But mentorship in general is more about just kind of the partnership. I'm happy to report that as of this morning, we got a signed term sheet from one of the larger VCs in the MENA region, and the investment would also be one of the first our first in Egypt for me personally as well as our new firm. So that's fantastic news, and we're off to the races. The website that's currently live right now is books.com.eg. It's a Middle Eastern books website, worldwide shipping. You can even shop through Facebook. We'll be coming out with a lot more in the future, and would love to have you all involved in the process.
Thank you.
Congratulations.
So in addition to the programs that Roham and others are involved with, there is a very, very beautiful organization called NIGMA. NIGMA in Arabic means star. And it's actually an acronym, as you would imagine, for networking, entrepreneurship, growth, mentorship, I think, and action. So it's a PhD from MIT that has set it up. She had about 100 entrepreneurs come in at MIT late last year. Of these, 10 are actually receiving very extensive training in a bootcamp format. And that program is actually going to continue to grow. Its website is, nigma.com, if you will. Very beautiful program. And Mona Mawafi has become a personal friend, and hopefully she will be soon visiting us here in California. The internship program, Dina, started in 1990. And it took the form in 1990 of having, let's say, six people emulating the roles of vice presidents in a startup company, of business development, of manufacturing, of product development, of sales, of finance, if you will, and then, of course, the CEO. And then come up with a business plan for something that we know has an application, if you will. And that becomes a very practical way of learning to work together as a team. And potentially that plan may be good enough that people will decide to go with it. Every single one, to my recollection, and I stand corrected if I'm exaggerating, that has gone through our mentorship program, which over time has evolved because most of the interns would actually come in with an objective to learn about something specific during the summer. And it's not about how can I be nice, but how can I be an expert in valuation methodologies, as an example. One of them is actually Michel Habib. Michel comes from USC, and most of us remember USC as what? You forgot, huh?
The best school.
The best school? Well, I'll remind you later. Okay. Well, tell us a little bit about what is your objective of the mentorship and how is it working for you?
Sure. Good morning, everyone. My name is Michel Habib, and I'm currently part of the summer internship program at Newberry Ventures.
So a lot of what I do is I check the feasibility of kind of the financial assumptions and projections that the startups give us, and I go over their business models with kind of a critical eye. And what this allows me to do is help, you know, improve the accuracy of their forecasts and their business plan, and ultimately gives us, I help the team get a better understanding of who the company is and what they do so we can better match them with, you know, with strategic partners and potential investors. A current company I'm working with is called Mixberry Media. They're a great startup that does online audio advertising. I'm working with the team. It's a great team and a great product, and they've basically come to us for our, you know, vast knowledge in the technology space and our connections with big players in the industry. And so while I'm learning a lot, ultimately the most value I bring to them is working directly with Dr. Hassanein here and connecting them, you know, with publishers, Al Jazeera being one of them, as well as potential investors in the Middle East, N2V, and idea developers, just to name a couple. Ultimately, I'm very blessed to have this opportunity given to me by Dr. Hassanein, where I'm not only learning a lot, but I actually make an impact with my work. And, you know, that's why I actually enjoy coming to work, is knowing that I do, in fact, make an impact. Thank you.
Oh, thank you.
Well, thanks very much, Misha. That sounds a little bit exaggerated. But I would say that one of the beauties of being with us is that it's a very collegial environment, if you will. One of the most wonderful interns that we have had is not with us today because apparently where she is going through her internship, they have to eat lunch at their desk. So getting back very quickly to USC, do you remember many, many years ago we saw on TV a very well-known football player in a car escaping? Do you remember his name? O.J. Simpson, yeah. Yeah. Okay, wonderful. So
we have lots of questions.
Okay.
We have lots of questions. Thank you for all of you. Thank you to all of you who contributed questions. These three questions are very similar, so I'm going to read all of them to you because they're all trying to get at the same thing, which is essentially what effect has the Arab Spring had on business and technology in the Middle East and North Africa? Someone else asked, what are some of the challenges you think young startups will face in the next 5 years, especially in the wake of the Arab Spring? And what would you suggest to young entrepreneurs who want to do business in Egypt and other countries despite the turmoil? Will an Islamist government discourage business and technology? Lots of questions, I know.
I would say, you know, coincident with the Arab Spring, which is the rise of the call for freedom, was a corresponding rise in entrepreneurship. A different type of freedom, of not growing to work for the government or for established institutions, but to define one's own destiny. And coincident with this rise, in a very synergistic way, an infrastructure was created of angel investors and venture capital financing and incubators and what have you that is helping. And in the case of a venture capital firm like Idea Developers in Cairo, who now has 17 companies in its portfolio, a lot of the investments were actually made this last year. So has there been delays? Of course. Is there a bigger market risk? Absolutely. Are there currency risks? Huge currency risks. In fact, there are many, many problems associated with the transfer of funds, not only outside of the country, but in the country. So I have to say the challenges are enormous, but let's say the hope is with the entrepreneurs.
Thank you. When you talk about building bridges, do you include building bridges to Israel, a high-tech nation also?
Well, very much so. You know, the man that I like the most and that I've worked the most with happens to be actually the son of the president of Shimon Peres. So Chemi Peres is absolutely brilliant. We were there actually in March. Just 2 days ago, I had actually entrepreneurs from Israel who came to my home to present a business plan because they were introduced to people who can make a difference, in fact, to Facebook through Chemi and others. Whether it is related to accelerating the growth together with the Palestinians, because there is a lot of outsourcing being given to the Palestinians and what have you, or just simply with the Israeli entrepreneurs. We had a program back in 1994 that I think was a perfect model of binational development. R&D is done in Israel at the time of the big migration of the Russians into Israel. And then business expansion is done in the United States. We had a very small fund. Half of it was contributed by the chief scientist of Israel. The fund was $20 million, if I remember. And because of the brilliance of the Israelis, the $16 million we invested returned to the investor something like $190 million. So it's a very proven, beautiful model.
Someone asked, the Middle East is filled with talented, passionate people, and there is a ton of money. What is missing to create more success stories?
Qatar is a very wonderful example. You can look at Qatar. How many have been to Qatar? One? Two? Do you like it? Okay, great. I think you can either look at it as a fiction. In other words, it's a desert, and then there are all of these magnificent buildings, but what for, and architectural designs and what have you. And subcontracting 8 American universities, top-notch, MIT, Carnegie Mellon, Virginia Tech, Cornell, and what have you, and saying for what and for whom. Or you can look at it as being, if you will, the equivalent of Florence during the Renaissance years, when there is absolutely nothing. But some good people with good heart and good mind said, let's not continue to live this life and create a society based on knowledge, education, and culture. It's true that they themselves realize you can build a superb museum and have magnificent content. If people come and take the photo of it from the outside and don't go in, then you have a problem in being imbued with the culture. But that's changing. And they know that if we were to, for example, as they have, create a Qatar Computer Research Institute, and as we were talking with Tahrid, measure the success by number of patents filed, the way France Telecom would do, rather than by number of spin-outs companies created on the basis of unique and valuable intellectual property, and make it grow and use the money then for economic development, not only through gas, because they have no oil, it's a very clean country, but also through entrepreneurship education and application of technology to relevant markets, then that would be fantastic. And that they're actually doing today. When will we see the results? I think in about 3 years.
Right. How can you overcome the huge differences between the countries in the Middle East, for example, Iran, Syria, Lebanon, et cetera, to create business and technology?
It's the same challenge that you have between, Luxembourg, Switzerland, France, the United Kingdom, and Ireland. Some of the cultures promote entrepreneurship. Some others, like in the case of France today with François Hollande, it's job creation through the government, the way Colbert did it in 1680. So I don't think it needs to be homogenized. Lebanon has always been known for extraordinary entrepreneurship, to the point where a friend of mine said, this is not a country, this is commerce.
Yeah.
People are, they are amazing. And, we know that one of the wealthiest men in the world is Carlos Slim Helou, who's Lebanese, living in Mexico. So I don't know if it really needs to be homogenized, but the people who have affinity for countries, like, for example, Abdelmonem Eliasser, who's not with us today, has an amazing company called Evontix, based here in Silicon Valley, focused on waste management. He happens to think that there is a win-win situation. He went to Libya and said it's got to be a national priority to clean up the streets after the revolution, and at the same time to bring in investors, and he has people coming in from Germany that have the know-how. He has the technology, and now it becomes a national initiative. I don't know. Would Walid do that? Probably not. But would Abdelmonem do that? Yes, and perfectly.
What role can the Silicon Valley diaspora play to build bridges between Turks and Arabs?
The so-called TABAK, Turkish-American Business Council, is extremely active. We actually will have a number of joint opportunities to explore that particular question, especially since, and I'm sure, Dina, you have seen it, but some people may have not seen, the most recent report in many of the countries that have been affected by the Arab Spring, positively or negatively, so Syria, Egypt, and Libya, and Tunis, and what have you. Amongst the many questions asked is, which country do you think should be the role model for yours? And Turkey came out number one,
right? There's a comment here, and then there's a question. So the comment is, the Sesame Project, S-E-S-A-M-E, Sesame Project is constructing a regional international light source lab under the auspices of UNESCO, modeled on CERN, C-E-R-N, I believe, which is providing such opportunities to students from MENA. Current members are Bahrain, Cyprus, Egypt, Iran, Israel, Jordan, the Palestinian Authority, Pakistan, and Turkey. And the question is, how can the culture of entrepreneurship be cultivated in MENA?
If you think that necessity is the mother of all inventions, then if you believe the polls amongst the university students about what would you like to be when you grow up, you would think that the answer is self-evident, and the question becomes if the culture within of entrepreneurship is imbued in each, how can it actually be translated into success stories? And that's exactly what we have been talking about today, you know, mentorship and angel financing. And in some countries like mine, like Egypt, it's also the absence of corruption and bureaucracy. You cannot do this overnight. But I was talking to a wonderful CEO of a semiconductor company and asking him, how do you spend your time? And I meant, of course, like any one of you would mean, between business development, product development, human capital development, innovation, and what have you. He said, half the time stuck in traffic and the other half dealing with the government agencies. Zero productivity.
All right. We are unfortunately running out of time, so we really have time for one last question, maybe two. So here's an interesting one. During this drumming for war, do you think it's appropriate to start engaging Iran, especially for all the science coming from there?
My wife is Iranian. So as a consequence, I would say yes. But I also loved Kofi Annan suggesting that he reaches out to Iran to help with Syria, because sometimes the absence of negatives is a positive. So if, for example, Russia were to be engaged, whether you like the Russians or not, to stop providing arms, then I think it's really quite positive. And Dina, if you look at the Iranian community here in Silicon Valley and the success they've had in entrepreneurship, it's absolutely disproportional to their number, anywhere from, you know, Omid Kordestani to Pierre Omidyar and so on and so forth, but also a very connected community, young and capable. And you would say, I'll be, excuse the expression, damned if I don't actually reach out to them. The best incubator in the world, Plug and Play, is owned and run by Saeed Hamidi. He's Iranian. So if you forget the politics, nuclear, and what have you, and you focus on the people, as entrepreneurs usually do, it's a no-brainer.
Thanks. And the final question here, how important is the training locally of bright graduate students in basic and applied research and technology?
It's very important, and it's happening. If we take Stanford as an example, or UCLA, let's say there are 500 clubs, and they attract people of special interest. Some of them are not necessarily into entrepreneurship, private equity, venture capital, and so on and so forth. But the training and the connectivity between them, the grants being given, like, for example, the Mayfield Fund has a grant that one of our intern, Roxana, who's not with us today, has actually won, provides financing to extend presence in the United States for training after she has graduated, and she did graduate last week from Stanford, and work with one of the portfolio companies. This wouldn't work unless the students have an affinity to look forward to compete in a program where they can earn the privilege to be trained. And the training program are there to ensure that when you are at the university, you say, the best thing that ever happened to me is to have been there.
Thank you very much, Dr. Hassanein. Our sincere thanks to our distinguished speaker, Dr. Osama Hassanin, for his insight and for sharing his experience building bridges between Silicon Valley and the Arab world. We also thank all the speakers that shared their experiences with us, and we also thank our audience here as well as those listening to us on the recording. We'd like to remind our listening audience that this is a program with the Commonwealth Club of California and that you are listening to Building Bridges Between Silicon Valley and the Arab World. And now this meeting of the Commonwealth Club of California, celebrating over 108 years of enlightened discussion, is adjourned.